Welcome to the CrossX Method, the podcast developed for our members and community to help drive your performance and health to new levels. As a CrossFit certified trainer, firefighter, and affiliate owner for the better part of a decade, I draw on my knowledge and experience, and more importantly, that of many professionals in the industry, to provide world-class information to our members and community. We look forward to helping you achieve optimal health and performance while having some fun conversations along the way. All right, guys, we're back with the CrossX Method, episode number 12. Today I'm here with Laurie Fauner of the Pelvic Wad on Instagram. You may have seen or looked into that, especially if you're a mum or pregnant or have been pregnant. And Laurie's also a physio. Welcome, Laurie.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Thanks for coming along. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Laurie. How long have you been a physio? What got you into sort of specializing in, the pelvic floor and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm Canadian, if anybody's wondering about the accent. I came to the University of Queensland in order to become a physio, but did exercise physiology beforehand, did personal training, and then while I was working as a physio, I did kind of general sports physio, musc physio, and then somehow ended up down this path treating women with pelvic floor problems, women during pregnancy, and stumbled while I was on this path, started seeing a whole bunch of women doing this weird thing called CrossFit, and looked into it and thought it was a really horrible bad thing to do for your body and it must be ruining them. So I decided, okay, I'm going to try it. I'll see what it is and how bad it is so I can tell people to stop doing it.
Excellent.
And that was almost 4 years ago, and I have been doing it ever since.
Excellent.
Because I really like it.
Excellent. That's really good to hear. We had Michael Dawson, who works at Peak Sports and Spine, on the podcast a few weeks ago. He trains here. And I find it really refreshing for physios to be open-minded about it and come in and look at CrossFit and go, oh, actually, all the misconceptions I had were just false, and I love it. And yeah, so exactly what happened with yourself. And I think that enables us athletes and everyone doing CrossFit to have much better resources when we go to see people like yourself and we say, hey, I've done this and I feel like this. And you can say, okay, well, you know, you're very familiar with the movements and you understand how it all works and what they may or may not have done in a particular way to cause an injury. And so that's great. It's really good.
It's really easy to judge something from far away. And it's really not until you try it that you kind of get a better understanding of it. And then I think are way better at helping people if you kind of know what's happening.
Perfect. Excellent. So, Laurie, today we're just going to talk a little bit about pregnancy.
Yep.
So training while you're pregnant. And we'll dig into your thoughts and your recommendations on, some training of the midline and core and things that pregnant females need to be mindful of when they're exercising and doing CrossFit, maybe some substitutions. We'll have a talk about some of the things that we do here and some of the things that we recommend and go from there. So I guess, first of all, you mentioned before we started hitting record, or before we hit the record button, that you've got some children. One, two, three?
I've got two.
Two?
Yeah, an eight-year-old girl and a, well, she's like 18 pretty much, and a 10-year-old boy.
Excellent. And so you weren't doing CrossFit at the time, just because you weren't, hadn't found it yet.
Was it even here 10 years ago? It was, wasn't
just.
It? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So did you want to have a bit of a chat about what you were doing while you were pregnant and maybe some of the things you avoided doing, which now when you look back and have, I guess, a little bit more information under your belt that you might have changed?
I will see how much I can remember.
Yeah.
Because if anybody understands baby brain, I don't think it ever goes away. Or is that just because I'm 40 now and I'm starting to lose my mind or my memory?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I've never had a baby. definitely have baby brain. So
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah, not just yeah, yeah. It's not just me.
No.
Yeah. So I remember. So look, when I was when I fell pregnant, I was teaching Pilates and working as a physio. And so at that time, I was doing Pilates. I can't even remember what kind of cardiovascular exercise. I'd always been active. I was a gymnast when I was younger. Then I went to university and just drank. I don't think I did much exercise at that time. So I was doing Pilates during pregnancy, and I just wasn't really into any kind of high intense exercise. I just started seeing pregnant women around that time, and for myself, I think I'm really trying to struggle thinking back to that time, because I was a physio, and what we learn in school is generally there's a lot of do's and don'ts, which even today, a lot of it is not based on anything. Like, there's not a lot of research with exercise, especially high intense exercise, is what you can and can't do, except for the big stuff. Like, you can't go scuba diving when you're pregnant.
Yes, of course.
So at that point there was, you know, don't do any kind of abdominal work, because if you do abdominal work, it will strain your tummy that's growing, and then you cause an abdominal separation.
Yes.
And when I say don't do any abdominal work, it was literally anything. Like, don't get out of bed.
Yeah.
Roll over to your side to get out of bed.
Bend your knees.
First trimester. As soon as you find out you're pregnant, don't do any of that.
Yeah, I think I remember. I think I remember going to the birth stuff with Alex, and. Yeah. And they said the same stuff to her, you know, don't sit up. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
That doesn't make
sense. And look, I probably
sense.
Would have told people that too at the beginning. It was very, stay in the midline, stay in a neutral position, don't twist, don't use your obliques. Oh my gosh. don't flex, don't extend.
Yep.
You literally, you know, just kind of stretch, stretch to the sides. You know, Pilates and yoga was really good because it's kind of taking it easy. And I mean, it's good now because there's a lot of, you know, because CrossFit's been around for a little while and more women are becoming pregnant and going through it, it's kind of in the limelight a little bit more. But I mean, elite athletes and athletes at that time were still exercising during pregnancy and afterwards, but we didn't have social media to talk about it enough or to understand, or to not even understand, but to hear about it more.
Yeah.
So it was really, you know, we might have had two lectures on pregnancy and childbirth.
Yeah, I guess the fear probably comes from a really good place as well, in terms of, you know, no one, kind of a good place and not so good, because no one wants anyone to, you know, harm their baby or ruin their pregnancy or anything like that. So it's like, hey, let's take this approach where it's like super, conservative, and let's not give any possible advice that could cause injury or make anything worse. But like you said, there's not that much research out there that's been done on women that are training while they're pregnant and what can be extremely beneficial, you know. So even a lot of the CrossFit stuff that you look through on the journal and that they're really starting to push, they had a big push with it like maybe 12 to 18 months ago, which was great. A lot of it, you know, the beautiful thing about CrossFit is they question everything. So so the guys running and setting up CrossFit, we don't just accept that, hey, these are the guidelines. You shouldn't let your heart rate get over this, and you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do this, because that's the way it's always been done. And then they go, okay, well, what's the evidence behind that? And then, you know, you really look into that, and there's, like you say, there's actually not that much evidence, supporting evidence behind all of these do's and don'ts and recommendations. I'm not sure from your educational point of view in terms of when you're studying physio, if they did provide that information or...
No, there wasn't anything, you know, there wasn't anything then, but in the last couple of years, the International Olympic Committee has come out with like a 7-part consensus statement on women elite athletes training through pregnancy and afterwards. And again, the big part is, it's really important to stay active. There are the big ones that you can't do, like downhill skiing because the risk of falling on top of your belly, scuba diving because of the, what is it, the blood pressure.
Yeah, yeah, the oxygen probably and the pressure.
Like something to do with scuba diving,
yeah,
I can't remember.
Yeah, the gases and the, yeah.
Contact sports because of again, the contact or falling. And the other one they do mention is holding your breath for heavy lifting. But
yes.
that's all they kind of say. There isn't any direction from there. It right. then goes more into cardiovascular problems. Like it doesn't then talk too much about tummy and pelvic floor. The blood pressure is the reason why they say the no heavy lifting.
And that's
or the no breath holding. So it's not even so much no heavy lifting. It's just not holding your breath because of blood pressure.
Right. And is that because of blood pressure? Is it about reduction of oxygen in your blood at all?
I'm trying to remember what they said. Sure. It generally was because the blood pressure changes in pregnancy and what can happen, and you can end up getting dizzy and passing out from breath holding. So it's just kind of try to avoid breath holding and exercise as much as you can.
Yeah. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, so blood pressure, does that increase during pregnancy, decrease?
That is a really good question that I should know.
Sorry for putting you on your spot there.
I
should probably know that too.
I'm pretty sure it increases, but then when you hold your breath, it decreases.
Right. Yeah. Because isn't it something like I think the blood thickens during pregnancy? I'm not sure. Hang on. Let me.
I did no research before coming in
me
today,
either.
And these are things that I should know. That I don't, because I did just come from a workout and remember
that's
the 40-year-old brain.
Excellent.
Stopped.
All right, cool. So I'll bring that up and I'll try and dig something up there. All right. So I guess what we need to sort of talk about when we have athletes in the gym training, especially first time mums.
Yep.
It can be really quite difficult for them because if they've been training quite hard at a pretty hard level, pushing hard, and then all of a sudden we're putting the brakes on, we're giving advice to slow down, it can be mentally challenging. So there's a big part of that, in regards to pregnant, females obviously training. The way we try and, from a mum's point of view, how do you think, what do you have any advice that we could give those people in terms of your perception of training while pregnant?
Do you mean from like a mental, psychological
standpoint?
Yeah, kind of
like, not a professional, like just your, as a mum, from a mental side of things.
Like taking apart kind of the changes in the physical body and putting that aside for a minute, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really hard when you have that mindset. And I think CrossFit attracts a lot of people with that kind of athlete mindset.
Absolutely.
Where you can push yourself and push your limits. It's been good for me in that respect because I'm the type of person who likes to sandbag everything and not push my limits at all. So it has helped me push my limits a little bit.
Excellent.
But yeah, I do find there's a lot of personalities that it's really hard to kind of get over that and know that you're not sandbagging it.
Yes.
And it's a really short time of your life,
9 or 10 months.
And by the time you find out you're pregnant, it's even,
less
than that.
Yeah.
When you look back, it's such a short period of time. It's less than a year where you just have to make little changes. And often in that first trimester, when you're physically growing every part of a human being, because by the end of first trimester, it is formed and then it just needs to grow pretty much. The fatigue that sets in so that your body can create a human will usually force people to have to pull back.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. When you put it in that perspective, that's, you bang on, you're actually growing another person, and the energy required for that.
Yeah.
Incredible. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge. So, with the pregnant females in here, what we sort of try and do is, or the advice I try and give is that if you do have trouble mentally in terms of, hey, my Fran time is this and I'm pregnant and I want to beat it and or my Grace time is this and I'm trying to match my time, is that we change the workout or scale it enough so that there's no possible way you could beat your time. And then that's going to enable you to mentally slow down. So,
because well, you're still not, you're not trying for 100%. Like you're,
no, that's
you're
right.
trying for, you know, maybe 80%, which is your new 100%, which
yeah.
can be hard to, again, it can be hard mentally to be able to accept that. But I wonder if a part of the reason why people have trouble accepting, apart from personality,
yep.
is social media. Because yes. they see all these other people pushing themselves that hard. But then you've got to think, like, you know, are those, if they're top level elite athletes pushing that hard, then their body, you know, is able to do it. Their 90% might be your 120%.
Exactly. So I'm glad you touched on that. So the way I look at it, it's like having a realistic understanding of where you are as an athlete. And as much as that is challenging to do, you know, because if you could be a top performer in your affiliate, but on a, let's say, a national scale, you know, you might not be in the top 1,000 in the Open. And that's okay. That's fine. Like, it is what it is. But we need to understand that that's where we are. And more often than not, if you're a new mum, or even if you've already got one young child or another kid, you've got so much else going on. You're working, you're coming to do your one workout a day, maybe a little bit, you know, afterwards in terms of extra training.
Not sleeping
properly, you know, and then you flick over and you have a look at, for example, Cara Saunders on Instagram, and she's doing an televised open workout, and you're like, shit, like, she, you know, she's still pushing hard. I should be able to push hard. But exactly like you said, you know, she's probably gone from doing 6 workouts a day for better part of 6 hours, plus mobility, plus sleeping, plus
for how many years,
giving herself the perfect nutrition over a long period of time, back to one workout a day. That's, you know, that could be a sixth of what she's normally doing in terms of volume. And like you said, in terms of intensity level, it might be 80 or 90%. Now if you're outside the top 1,000 in Australia and you're doing one CrossFit class and maybe some extras once a day, you know, and then you see Cara doing that, and it's like, well, Cara's doing it. It's like, yeah, well, let's understand the difference in level of performance there. She's a elite, world-class level CrossFit athlete. So, you know, that reduction in volume and intensity for her is massive. For you, if you do what she's doing, it is then a dramatic increase in intensity. So just being mindful of having some humility and understanding of where I actually am in this big picture of athleticism. And I don't want to frame that and take anything away from any of the girls that are pushing, because training while you're pregnant, that's amazing. I think it's one of probably the best things you could do for yourself and your baby if you're doing it correctly. And pushing, you know, pushing intensity during that period is definitely not what we recommend. So some of the things that, you know, we kind of say to our female athletes is, one, as our coaching staff, what we try and implement is we maintain the stimulus of the movement and of the workout. So, for example, if it's Fran, you know,
hold on, don't laugh at me, because I've only done Fran once
very recently,
and I can't actually remember what it is.
Yeah, so Fran is 21-15-9 thruster pull-up.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Yeah, okay. So it's maximum intensity workout. Top level is around 2 minutes in terms of speed. If we were to set it in a class, it would be a 10-minute cap.
I'm like, it might have taken me maybe 9 minutes.
Yeah. So we'd put a 10-minute cap on, I'm sure. You're at CFB, hey?
Yeah.
I'm sure Matt Swift would do that as well, at least. So, so if we're looking at a workout like that, we want to maintain the stimulus, right? So if we're in the early stages of pregnancy and we're still happy to squat below parallel, and you know, we can still press, and then we can still do pull-ups, then, you know, we can do that workout. If you're trying to change, you know, if you're trying to change it enough so that you're not being comparative with your old scores, just to enable you to mentally reduce that intensity, we might say, hey, let's go 21 thrusters, 21 pull-ups, and then in between each round or after each round, we're going to do a 200-meter jog, right? And that's just going to allow that heart rate to come back down a little bit, the breath to come back, so we're not absolutely exhausting ourselves of oxygen. And there's no way that you should be able to beat a previous time adding in 600 meters worth of running.
Hmm.
So then it mentally just takes that away from that.
Yeah, that's
so,
a good idea.
Yeah. So as our recommendations is, one of the priorities is maintaining the stimulus. So we're still trying to get through that full range of motion for the squat and the pull-up if we can do it. Later stages of pregnancy, we might reduce the depth of the squat depending on, you know, how the athlete's feeling with that. And you might take it back to ring rows, something like that, so we're not getting that big kipping motion there.
Yeah, I think that people need to get used to the idea too that they are going to lose some fitness. Like,
yeah,
you're still going to be feeling like you're working as hard and sometimes harder, but your fit, it changes, and it has to change because you have to accommodate this alien inside. My husband made me watch Aliens.
Yes.
For my first pregnancy, and I'm like, that is so true. You are, it's like growing an alien inside.
Yeah.
So yeah, your body has to change, but it's hard. It's a mental barrier that at some point your body forces you to get through that, and you do realize, yeah, that, you know, you can't push it
as
hard.
You know, and it's a massively selfless act, having a child, probably one of the most selfless acts you can do. And we just got to get to the point where it's not about us as a performance anymore. We're now, you know, you're now a mum, and whether you like that or not, or are happy with that or not, it's a responsibility that we have to look after that baby.
Mm.
And, you know, no matter what, even if you were some way able to improve your fitness and health throughout your pregnancy, you're going to lose the majority, if not all of that, during childbirth.
Mm.
Because you're forced to have, depending how the baby comes out, you're forced to have quite a period of rest there.
Yeah.
Where any sort of gains in aerobic capacity will be lost. You know, strength gains aren't too bad. You'll be able to maintain quite a lot of that. So it really doesn't make that much sense in the lead up to try and gain as much aerobic capacity as you can when it's going to disappear, you know, within that time frame. Mm-hmm. If we can continue to move well, maintain strength rather than, you know, overexerting ourselves, holding our breath, like you mentioned, for 1 RM lifts, then, you know, you're going to set yourself up pretty well for childbirth.
Mm.
So, you know, some other things that we're mindful of as coaches is basically the overall health and safety of the mum and the bub. So we're not going to ask you to do rope climbs if you can fall from a height and land on the baby and, you know, the worst case scenario there. We need to be mindful of, as you move through your pregnancy, it's going to change. You've got a big belly there now that's getting in the way, physically in the way of when you're doing certain things. Some things are going to feel comfortable, some are not. So one of the things is really listening to your body. And, you know, if you come in and the workouts, you know, handstand push-ups and muscle-ups, and you used to be able to do that, yet you kick up into a handstand, you feel totally uncomfortable and you're losing your balance and you feel a bit dizzy, then, you know, we need to recognize that and step back and go, hey, what else can I do today?
Hmm.
Let's change that to some dumbbell presses or, you know, some sort of other alternative.
What's your stance and your take on, like, the change in the barbell path that you have to create a new motor pattern the bigger your belly gets when you're using a barbell?
Yeah, so obviously I haven't had to do that myself.
Yeah. Put a basketball in your shirt.
Yeah, I'll try it. Yeah. So the thing is, we're not looking for improving our 1 RM clean and jerk and snatch during that period. And yes, we do have to cycle the barbell around a belly, so it's going to be a bit of a bigger pull around. Or more importantly, our body's going to move further back from the bar because we always want to try and maintain that vertical bar path. So further you move it away, you either have to move the bar or your body. So we always try and move our body around the barbell. And it's going to be at a weight that, you know, we're not going near a 1 RM. We're not likely going to miss the lift.
Mm.
So I don't think it's a dramatic shift in, you know, performance or a dramatic shift in changing that motor pattern so much that when you come back after childbirth that it's going to be an issue.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to start really light and relearn kind of patterns again anyway with a whole new body.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's going to be totally different. Now, in saying that, caveat, I haven't trained a gold medalist Olympic weightlifter through pregnancy, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe there's some differences there at that really top end of the sport. But I would imagine that Olympic weightlifting solely as a sport probably wouldn't lend itself too well to continuing your training during pregnancy.
No, I think that would mess them up a little bit.
I think that wouldn't be the best. But, you know, the other things we need to be mindful of, the hormones that come in. So, you know, relaxin is a big one. And, you know, the thing with pregnancy is what I found is it's totally off your radar until you're in it, right? It's kind of like you might even be trying to get pregnant or have a baby. But until you're there, you don't know about, you don't research anything, you don't look into it, all you know is you're just trying to have a baby. And then you're pregnant, and then it's like, oh shit, I didn't think about my training, I didn't think about these hormones, I didn't know you couldn't do that, I didn't, you know, there's all these things that you start learning about as a parent. It's kind of like, I remember it when I was a PT many, many years ago when I was first starting, and I cringe when I think of this, I was talking to a new mum about getting into the gym and training. I was running like a 12-week challenge at a Good Life gym. And she's like, I just can't get in. And I'm like, well, you know, like we're open at 5 a.m. You know, like come in first thing in the morning. And she's like, well, you know, my baby's not sleeping. And I'm like, well, you know, is your husband at home? She's like, yeah. I'm like, well, you know, you can get into the gym. Now on the flip side of that, when you see firsthand a baby not sleeping and the sleep deprivation and all of those things, I'm like, man, I must have been such an asshole. She must have thought I was such a, you know, a bastard. But you know, like
you learn.
Yeah, until you have kids, you don't, you know, as much as you think you understand what's going on and how it is and how it affects your life, you don't, right? And that's not holding anything against the people that don't have kids that are trying to understand. Or are empathetic towards that. It's just that you don't understand, and that's fine. It is what it is. And I think it's similar to when you become pregnant. You think you know what it's going to be like, but then it hits you, and it's like, wow, I didn't think of all these things. So going back to, you know, the hormonal changes, you know, you have this hormone called relaxin, for those that don't know, is designed to loosen up your ligaments and your joints to allow your pelvis to open so you can give birth, right? And that then also affects plyometrics when you're training, you know, box jumps. It also affects your balance, you know, all of those things that need to be taken into consideration, squat depth. And, you know, we can really risk injury if we don't have a good understanding of that. So that's another guideline we give, you know, we start reducing box jumps and any sort of plyometric work for our pregnant mums as well. So.
And that hormonal change is also on top of genetics. Like some people are just genetically looser than other people and more mobile. And then those hormonal changes on top of genetics can mean that people have even more laxity than others. This is where that, you know, it depends and that individuality really comes in. And it's hard too. If you're at a gym and you're more mobile genetically than someone else, and to see them being able to do things, but then you need to restrict yourself, which again comes back to that mental, like, oh,
the ego,
trying to be inside your own body and not other people's.
Yeah. Perfect. Cool. You know, we also briefly discussed, you know, being mindful of what and who you follow on Instagram. Like, you know, you can get some really good benefit from, you know, mothers that are athletes, like, you know, Cara, going through the pregnancy and seeing what she's doing and you know, seeing how she's applying her training during her pregnancy. You can get a lot of benefit from that, but there is that negative downside of, well, if she's doing it, I can do it. But it comes back to exactly what you just said. You know, you're in your own body. You are who you are. And,
it's like anything with social media, like the people that you follow, and depending on how much social media you are on, like especially with Instagram, like what you're seeing more, like what you see often, I don't think people realize really kind of sits in the back of your brain, even when you shut your phone off, depending on all the types of people you follow. If you follow a whole bunch of different really high level athletes, and they're all pregnant and they're all doing kind of varying modifications and different things, but you continually see that, I think then people start to judge themselves against what other people are doing, and then might feel inferior that they can't continue to do those things or strive to be able to do those things. So not even just like the one person you follow, if you are following, you know,
a whole bunch of
different people who are, you know, and I don't think people go on social media to show their, you know, modifications generally.
Yes. Yeah.
There are some good ones out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like the teenage girl or boy thing that is following, you know, the Insta model, you know, half naked photos on there, you know, pretty much all the time, and, you know, striving to look like that, or constantly comparing yourself to all these beautiful people that have been photoshopped and, you know, doing God knows what to their body.
Even if you're aware of that, I still don't think people understand how much it plays on your mind.
Yeah, like, right. Yeah,
on
yeah,
a
yeah.
subconscious level, which is why I try to tell people to stay off social media or limit their amount of time on social media.
Yeah, sure.
But also just be, you know, aware of who they're following, because however those metrics work, you know, that makes... Yeah. I don't know how it works, but it makes whatever you're looking at come up a number of times. Like, you don't see absolutely everything. You only see like bits and pieces.
Because
if you're following 2,000 people, you don't see 2,000 of their photos.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know how it works. But
I
anyway.
Have no idea. I'm the worst with it.
Get off social media.
What blows my mind is I'll like Google something at home on my computer. It might be like new rogue barbell.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at Instagram.
And it comes
new
up.
New rogue barbell. I'm like,
oh, I know.
What the...
Have you not noticed that happens even without Googling? That just when you're talking, I will talk about something. Like right now, we're talking about, say, Cara Saunders. I'll go on my phone later and that will be in my search engine and be the first thing that comes up. Your phone's listening to you. Someone told me that there's a way to turn it off. It's almost
now.
Like, I know, it's like Google Home thing, which I don't have, that
Jeez.
You just
talk to. Yeah.
Well, supposedly your phone is always listening to you too.
Shit.
I know.
All right. That's scary. I'm going to have heaps of like pregnant ladies on my Instagram now.
You will, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, cool. Awesome. That's fun.
Could be worse. We could be talking about other things in my work.
Yeah, right. Okay, cool. So another thing I wanted to talk about is also, you know, for our members, being mindful of... the conversations you're having and how you're acting and how that might affect someone else. So when you become a mom or when you, you know, become around pregnant women and stuff like that, there is a high percentage of people that have unsuccessful pregnancies, you know, for whatever reason. You know, my wife was one. She had an ectopic pregnancy after our first.
Mm.
And it's a huge emotional roller coaster, you know, you're getting ready to have this new baby and then, you know, you might lose it, something bad happens. And it's far more common than what most people realize, especially before you get into that age group or before you get into pregnancy. And coming into, say, a CrossFit class and we're like, hey, this is what we're doing today. And you know, we have a pregnant mother in the class and we say, look, we recommend that you do XYZ for today. And it's like, if you kick back against that or you have an attitude about that or you whinge or complain about that and there's another mother in earshot that has...
So you mean the pregnant woman complaining
that
she has to modify?
Yeah, okay.
I thought you meant someone else.
No. Okay, so the pregnant woman's like, oh, I don't, you know, this sucks. I have to do this or it sucks being pregnant. You know, I can't do whatever. You know, muscle ups anymore, I have to do this, it's bullshit. Just be mindful of who's around and, you know, how that might affect someone else who has no children and has been trying their whole life to have kids and has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on it and is unable to have kids or has lost a baby or, you know, any number of circumstances that could arise. So just being mindful of how fortunate and lucky you are to be pregnant and still able to come in and exercise and live your life. I think is very important. So just having that bit of awareness, I think, is a big deal.
And I don't think that goes just for the gym. It's generally outside of the gym as well.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, of course. Exactly. Cool. So moving on, what I'd like to ask of you is maybe some practical guides for our girls that when they are exercising, especially in terms of their core and their pelvic floor, so like your kind of specialty, things they can look out for, you know, things like coning and stuff like that. And I'm sure you'll go into it. And,
I get people to think of it like by trimesters, because again, often that first trimester when you're growing the human is where most people are really tired and fatigued. So it's not even so much of a worry about what's happening with your abdominals or your pelvic floor. It's just trying to get through your day or an hour. Because sometimes that fatigue is really, really hard. And I always tell people the fatigue you feel in that first trimester will usually go away around 12 to 14 weeks. And even with a newborn and other kids running around, it's not the same fatigue. Like that fatigue is, it's horrible if you have it. So just listening to your body and pulling the intensity back. And if you wake up one day and you're like, I just don't feel like I have it today, then you can either go in and stretch if you really like the social side of things.
Yeah, which is important.
Or you can have a day where you just don't go.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You'll be all right.
Again, especially if you're working or even if you already have kind of have other kids. And, you know, once you get into that second trimester, it's not a – the first, second, third trimester are kind of by weeks, but it's not like you switch from one to the next right on time. Sometimes it's a little bit more of a slower progress. But that's when we start to get people to think about, you know, just being aware if there's any changes in bladder function, bowel function. You know, are you – leaking when you do double unders, which it's a very common, doesn't mean it's normal. And I actually see a lot of women who have never been pregnant and who aren't pregnant who have that issue, but that's a whole other podcast topic.
Yes, okay, yeah.
But just knowing that if during pregnancy some things start to happen that you haven't had happen before, or if you have leaked before and you're still leaking, it just means that something is not right, and it's not always pelvic floor muscles. And even if often it will have to do with pelvic floor muscle strength, but it may be that, you know, a lot of athletes too have really good muscles and sometimes they're too good. And sometimes your body's really good at compensating and guarding and protecting when something is different. So even just hormonal changes, but now you're growing a child, everyone's body, you know, might be like, ooh, this is, you know, weird, or I better guard and protect it more. So it works harder to guard and protect, which can change how the pelvic floor muscles are working. And again, sometimes that changes the ability to get strength out of the muscle. It might change the timing of the muscle, but it also changes your hormones, and pregnancy will change connective tissue, which is what is keeping the bladder in the right spot.
Right.
So also the uterus sits on top of the bladder. So then you've got this heavier thing sitting on your bladder with stretchier tissue that's supposed to be supporting it. So you can have the best perfect pelvic floor muscles in the world, but because that connective tissue has changed, that's when people can start to leak. And usually the leaking will happen with things like impact. So running, definitely double unders, because you've got such a higher jumping, vertical excursion, higher ground reaction forces, box jumps for some people as well, but even things like toes to bar, jumping down off of the bar, or pull-ups where there's a lot of pressure, sometimes at the bottom of the lifts. So if little things like that are happening,
I'll just clarify, because I know exactly what you're talking about. But when you say leaking...
urine or bowels.
Yeah.
It's not as common for women to kind of, especially during pregnancy, to have accidents where they lose kind of their bowel motion.
Yep.
You will see that actually more in long distance runners, even in guys.
Yeah,
I think just recently... Oh, what's her name? The English woman who is a really good marathon runner.
I'm the worst fan of all sports.
But so anyway, she was just like, you know, she had to go.
Hmm.
So sometimes the guys just let it run down their leg. Yeah. She just pulled off to the corner, quickly went on the side of the road, on the side of the road in the marathon. And then kept running and
did
still
she
won. Yeah, she still won.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's not really worth it if you don't.
I can't remember her name. I should know. Anyway. So when I kind of talk about leaking, I'm more talking about urinary leakage. So
Yeah. Excellent. I just wanted to clarify because there might be like some 18-year-old guy trains in our gym listening to this going, what does she mean with leaking? Like, I don't know what she's talking about.
Especially into kind of second trimester, but definitely into third trimester.
Yeah.
Feeling like there's a bulge or a lump down in their vagina. Some people feel like they something drops. And it's more common in women who are pregnant but have already had a vaginal birth.
Yep.
Where things may have been stretched. They might feel fine, but then again, the changes in the hormones, all of these other things kind of combined, their bladder starts to drop down. Or in first trimester, because the uterus is heavy, the elastic bands that have once held that uterus up, just one pregnancy makes them a little bit stretchier. So things can start to drop down. But as soon as the baby gets bigger, your uterus kind of flops forward into your tummy, and often those symptoms can kind of resolve a little bit.
Okay, cool.
So just being aware of anything strange down there, but also...
And then if something strange does happen,
yep.
What's the steps? Like what I'm
look, pregnant if there's
for
anything
the first time,
like,
I start doing double unders, I wee myself, I've never done that ever before. I'm like, shit.
Well, then usually I'll tell them to book into a physio.
Perfect.
Who does this kind of stuff.
Excellent.
But things like big things like bleeding, pain, dizziness, vomit, like all those really, really weird things that shouldn't happen, that's straight to your GP.
Yeah, for sure.
So just trying to be mindful about things that change down there. Some women will have, remember I said sometimes pelvic floor can be too tense, and often with a lot of athletes that can happen. And if there's too much strength and the muscles can't relax, it's really hard to pee, but sometimes it can be hard to pee in pregnancy if the bladder is being squashed by the end.
Right.
But people can be constipated. One of the big ones is it's painful to have intercourse.
Right, yep.
So just making sure that, you know, that may not be obvious. Well, obviously, hopefully it's not happening in the gym.
That's the worst thing that could happen.
It is, but because we're talking about things in the gym, I'm assuming people aren't doing that.
Hopefully that's not going on in the gym. Yeah.
So, but also then when you think about abdominals, your abdominal muscles have to stretch because they're going to have to get bigger, which is why abdominal work, the reason why you do abdominal work should change. So, even though you probably could do sit-ups and all this really hard abdominal strengthening exercises, it doesn't mean that you can't. It just means that your reason for doing them should change.
And so you're saying the reason should be in preparation for childbirth? Is that kind of
but more like you still want to, maintain the ability to use those muscles and to support you when you're doing physical activity.
Yep.
But trying to get a six-pack is no longer your reasoning. Or being able to do, GHD sit-ups is probably needs to be put aside for a period of time because the muscles have to lengthen and stretch. And if you look at kind of any person who has definition in their abdominal muscles, even men, there's that line down the center. And the line down the center is your linea alba, which is like, it's like connective tissue. And it's the space where a lot of the other kind of abdominal muscles, because you have a whole bunch of different layers, and they crisscross. And that space, because of the tissue it's made up of, it's affected by hormones, which means it opens and stretches. So everyone's abdominal muscles, as they grow outwards, are also going to go sideways. So there's going to be a little space that happens. That's normal. But it's how well you control the pressure inside your abdominal canister is what matters. So if you can't control pressure very well, which pressure is created as soon as you talk or cough or breathe. But especially doing exercise, pressure increases. So if you're not controlling pressure through your abdominals, people will get that little kind of pokey out belly button, or they've got a Toblerone sitting lengthwise on their belly, and it just points out. That's the coning that you were talking about before.
Yep.
Or sometimes people will...
So why is that a bad thing? Like what? What can that cause?
So if you are not controlling pressure repetitively over time, again, if it happens here and there, you'll notice it if you're leaning back on a chair and you go to get up and then you get that little poke out thing. Yep. If it happens here and there, it may not be a big deal.
Don't freak out,
but if you're pushing through that in every workout every day, you're going to strain the tummy muscles, which means that once the baby comes out, you may keep that separation. You may not be able to have those abdominal muscles function a little closer together. Or what we've kind of moved away from, so it used to be after pregnancy, it was, or even during pregnancy, like how far apart are the muscles. We measure with our fingers from, you know, the thickest six-pack to the other thickest six-pack sideways. But we've moved away from that a little bit in the last couple of years. It's more about, again, the other muscles underneath and how well they can function. So if people still have a separation, but all the other tissue underneath is really good, it generally stays pretty tight when they do activity. Whereas if it's really soft underneath, that's when it's harder to control pressure. Pressure will go where there is the least resistance.
Yes.
So whatever tissue is thinner and softer, that's where it kind of sticks out. That goes down to pelvic floor as well. If you've got awesome abs, your diaphragm's on top, you're using all this work to like squeeze your tummy muscles, your diaphragm can't go anywhere, all the pressure is going to end up going down. And it's okay if your body can cope with that and adapt to it. And if it can't, that's where things like prolapse comes, where the bladder gets pushed down or things. So tummy muscles, I get women to be aware kind of mid second trimester probably, whereas if they've already had a kid, you'll notice.
So how many weeks are we looking at there, like 20?
Yeah, around that.
Yeah.
If you've already had a child, your muscles will set. Your body remembers it's had a stretch.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden at 8 weeks,
just goes, whoop.
Yeah, and you look like you're 20 weeks already.
Yeah.
Because your body's like, oh, I'm just going to let go.
Yeah.
So it's just having a look at when you do things that really have to use your tummy muscles, like, you know, V-ups or
toast to bar.
GHD sit-ups. I usually
knock those
get people to kind of cut those out a little bit earlier, only because there's so much extension. There's a lot of it. So if you're coming from a lot of extension, and this is where kind of hanging from a bar and doing bar work that involves abdominals comes into play, because your arms are up and attached to something. It's pulling your rib cage up, so you're now trying to use a muscle that is starting from a lengthened position, which is harder, which is why those exercises are generally
difficult.
Harder. But to an abdominal muscle that has now abdominal muscles that are now lengthened and stretched. So they're already on length tension and stretched, and you're still trying to use them. And sometimes the force of that exercise is too much, but your body's like, but I'm going to do it.
Right.
And it uses everything it can. And again, if you don't have that good control through the center, then that's often when people will start poking out a little bit.
And you're risking long-term damage, right?
You can be. Yeah. We don't have
the
so you know how I said there's not a lot of research on a lot of this stuff? Muscle separation, even less.
Right.
It's been really hard to study. And again, genetics play a really big role. There used to be a lot of do's and don'ts surrounding muscle separation. And slowly, that's kind of easing up. Again, if you're strong, it's better.
Yeah.
But just knowing that, it just means that if you see that kind of poking out, you just need to modify the exercise a little bit to see if you can control it. So you either, sometimes it's just because people are not breathing well. Like if you can breathe, that helps muscles connect. It might help control pressure. So then you may not need to completely stop that activity for a period of time. But once you get to like 20 weeks plus, I get people to really start looking, even pull-ups.
Yep.
Like have a look at, you don't realize how much abdominals work for so many exercises until they're stretched and you have to try to work them.
Yeah. So let's say we've got toaster bar on a workout or GHD sit-ups, regular sit-ups, something where we're flexing. What are some things you would recommend in place of that, if any? Or if not, like do you recommend maybe let's totally sub out that movement, we could do a kettlebell swing, we could still get a similar conditioning effect, and then go outside when we're under no time or any sort of pressure and do this for your abdominals? What would you recommend? Like,
so this is where I find physios, kind of our knowledge base stops. Like even though I did exercise physiology before, training, like strength training, is not a big part of physio.
Yep.
And so when it's surrounding things where, okay, well, we want to take some of these exercises out and modify and change them, that's where I hope that the coaches have some really good ideas. So this is where I usually pass on to you.
No, that's
fine.
And I'm
like, okay, well, what are other modifications? Like, I would have never thought about kettlebells in change of something else.
So we're not... So something like the kettlebell swing. So say we had a 21-15-9 toe to bar and...
So you can do knee ups.
Lunge, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's say we're at a point where knee ups are causing some coning as well.
Yeah.
You know, we might, for a similar, you know, sort of stimulus in terms of the conditioning effect, we will go with a kettlebell swing. Now, you're still going to, you're going to need to brace your midline, so you're still going to get some work
there.
We're
still working, yeah.
It's not as if we're not working the midline. It's going to be a similar time domain than what we're after. And then after that, it depends where the athlete sits on their progression of athletic ability, I guess. You know, if we can do some support work, maybe where we have our, you know, the top of a ring dip or the top of a bar dip, even if we're wanting to keep it more stable. And, you know, we can take away that extension that you mentioned before with the arms, and we can bring the knees up and maybe just do some holds or even some very slow lowers where we are controlling that pressure, not getting any coning, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like static, you know, planks and stuff like that, that can help, providing, again, that we're not...
Planks are hard because you're now...
And you've got the weight of the baby.
That's it. You've got all the weight sitting in that thin connective tissue. So most people, even if they don't have a diastasis for other exercises, which is the technical term for separation, will usually have one in a plank position.
Yes, okay.
And for a lot of people, after having a baby, it just never, ever goes away. Because, again, that... It depends on the person, but
yeah, it depends where they're at.
Once that tissue is kind of thin and stretched, it may come back in kind of upright supine positions, but as soon as you have all your organs sitting in it, or the baby's sitting in it, sometimes it's just too much pressure. So I'll usually get people, if they're going to do any planking, to either put it onto an incline and see if they can control.
Yeah, perfect.
Or just to do, you know, depending on how bad it is, teaching them how to control it in on your hands and your knees.
Yes.
But still getting into that position. Because, again, if you take a position out and you never do it again, once you have a baby, you've got to get up off the floor. You're going to have to pick some things up. Like, you're then going to have to be in that position. So it's better if you can still get into it and just, you know, in little bits, learn how
really
to control.
So shorter time frames.
Yeah.
And just so long as we're getting some work on that midline. And what people often... what I find they'll often go away from is like, oh, I'm not training my midline because I'm not doing GHD sit-ups, I'm not doing toes to bar anymore, you know. Oh. But we're still able to back squat. We can still hold some weight on our shoulders. All of those movements, by definition, start with our core. Core to extremity is a big part of CrossFit.
Lifting your arm up off the floor.
Yeah.
Core has to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Off the floor. No, my arm doesn't hang out, but off the table.
Off the table, yeah. So, having... you know, setting your core, it should be at the beginning of everything that we do.
Yeah.
So when we're adding load to that system, we're still training through that. So,
but the setting of the core, so this is where, so now because I'm doing my PhD, I'm doing research with women who are lifting heavy weights. Now, we haven't gotten to the women who are lifting heavy weights
pregnant?
Part.
Oh, no.
No, I'm not doing pregnant women. Oh, the ethics for that is so much harder. But I am using 3D40 ultrasound. Now, the ultrasound goes against the perineum, so the vagina, not inside, but we can see bladder, uterus, rectum, we can see pelvic floor muscles.
Right.
And looking at the different way that people brace has been really interesting because I don't know, and this is where, again, whole other topic, but trying to work out how people are taught to brace and how they do it, because it's still all about, you know, generating or controlling pressure, because that's what helps to stabilize your spine in a lift.
Yes.
But if I find a lot of women will squeeze their abdominals really tight and may or may not think about pelvic floor.
Yeah.
And pelvic floor should turn on automatically. Unless you're sitting down emptying your bladder or bowels, it goes, oh, crap, there's pressure. I better work.
Well, that was one thing I was going to ask you. Like, we, you know, from a CrossFit, say we're teaching a back squat.
Yeah.
it's like we don't like, I mean, we control flexion and extension of the midline. So we, you know, we try and get a neutral spine and have everyone in a good anatomical position. But we're not specifically out there saying this is exactly how we want you to brace.
But there is, I don't think there is a specific way that everyone needs to, but I think people need to know that sometimes the people are really good at overdoing things.
Yep.
And what I will see with the ultrasound is that when people overdo it, and again, this will come down to genetics and connective tissue support to those organs, often people, when they do it, they're actually pushing their organs down. So they're bracing so hard that it's actually pressing down on the bladder and moving it down. You will physically see the bladder.
So they're pushing outwards.
Yeah. They're not even pushing outwards. They're just tightening everything so much, and it's almost like they're starting to put force and pressure down.
Yep.
Now, sometimes the cure for that is just to not brace so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
A little
yeah.
bit lighter.
Yeah.
You know, especially in pregnancy, you're not doing 1RMs anyway.
No.
But also bringing pelvic floor into it. Like pelvic floor, like I said, should be automatic, but in pregnancy might be a little
strained. Yeah.
Yeah, it might be. But also, like, sometimes it's just slower or the timing's off. And if you start with pressure and you kind of generate, say, 100% around your midline and from on top, but it only comes in 95%, then you're going to lose some of your... pushing against some of that weaker support. And some people, you know, some people do start off with weaker pelvic floor. So I try to get people to think of their pelvic floor when they're bracing. But depending on what you're doing, it's easier to think about it before you do a deadlift than it is at the start of a squat. So
I'm just mentally running through this in my own head. I'm like thinking about deadlifting my pelvic floor. And then,
it's like your tummy. It works at different intensities for different exercises at different times. And that's why, thank God, we don't have to think about it all the time.
Yeah.
But some people should, and they need to. And in pregnancy is a really good time to get your brain connected to it. Learn some of the coordination. Because once you have a baby, and especially if it comes out down below, it's trauma. Like it's stretching. And if you have not thought about a muscle and worked it and are aware of it, and then there's trauma to it, it's really hard to find it afterwards. Your recovery takes a little bit longer. So trying to start thinking about how to integrate it into exercise and activities. So I usually will get people think of the hard part of an exercise. So the deadlift from the floor or getting out of the bottom of a squat or a pull-up. Is trying to make sure that you're breathing through that, because how your diaphragm moves when you breathe usually will lift up. So it tends to take some pressure off. And often, because abdominals are working through your exhale, your diaphragm is rising. Pelvic floor usually works at that time too. So that's often when we'll time the pelvic floor, is get people to start your breath out before you move, turn your pelvic floor on, and then move.
Right.
Which is hard to think about.
Yeah, it is. That's a lot.
Breathe, pelvic floor, move.
Yeah. Continue breathing out as you...
Yeah, and continue that breath out and that pelvic floor hold until you stand.
Yeah, cool.
And then playing around with it kind of on the way back down. That's the harder part.
Well, the good thing is we should be doing... You know, these are the opportunities, and I think that that's some good stuff for pregnant females to work on and focus on while they're pregnant. You know, they're going a bit lighter. The pressure's off.
Yep.
Let's look.
They can work on skill.
Yeah, work on some skills, and then do some of these things that you're mentioning. All right. So, is there anything you recommend, sort of, before, other than what we spoke about, before sort of childbirth and immediately after, in terms of the pelvic floor, to give them the best opportunity of setting themselves up for a better recovery and returning to normal training afterwards?
Well, like we said, trying to be aware of it.
Yep.
So know, but when I say aware, it's knowing how to contract it, but also knowing how to relax it. Because everybody, and I mean, it's in the media a little bit more, so people have heard of Kegels, people have heard of pelvic floor.
So I'm going to go there to explain a Kegel.
Oh, well, it's just a pelvic floor contraction, but it's an American terminology, because it was an American guy with the last name Kegel who... just worked it out in the 40s or whenever.
Right. Okay. Cool.
So it's really just, it's squeezing those muscles underneath like you're holding on to wind or weight. And there's a lot of research right now in men's health. So one of my supervisors, Paul Hodges, is doing some really cool research And they've found some neat terms that help men think about that muscle. The best cue is I'm
looking forward to hearing this.
To think, I don't have a penis, so I don't know.
Right. Okay.
But you need to imagine that you're trying to pull the turtle's head in, or like pull your head in. So excellent. Men try that. I usually tell men to think about when you go into water, like you're trying to lift your balls up because you don't want them to touch the cold water.
Oh, yeah, like when you're walking into the ocean.
Yeah. But yeah, that kind of the weird turtle's head, I don't know, it was a new one.
Cool.
You guys work that out.
I'll have to think about that.
But for women, it's usually thinking of holding on to wind and wee, like yep. You've got to hold on, but not doing it when you pee. So people will say, go pee, stop pee halfway. And, you know, a test once every couple months to see if you can do it and then let go is okay. But if you do it every day, you annoy your bladder. So being aware of how to squeeze and contract, can you hold it for long periods of time? But knowing when we test and get people to do that, like a max hold and holding it, it's really hard to breathe, but you should be able to breathe. But it's not how it works in real life. Max holds come into play when you cough, sneeze, laugh, lift, which is a couple seconds. Then it dies off again a bit.
Right.
So when we get people to do a max hold and see if they can hold it for 10 seconds, it's hard because it's not a normal movement, but it's an odd muscle to be able to train for, say, hypertrophy or something.
Yep. So if they wanted to give themselves every opportunity to do this well.
Yep.
Is there some sort of protocol that you can recommend, like hold for this time, relax for this time, hold for this
time? No, because everybody's different.
X amount of times a week? No? Okay.
No, everyone's different. Look, out there people will say 3 sets of 10 for 10 seconds 3 times a day.
Right.
But what position are you in? What are you doing? Like, I want people to be aware. So in order to be aware of it, you have to try it when you're not doing anything just so you can think about it.
Yeah.
So can you squeeze it? Can you relax it? Can you feel the sensation of letting go? Because most people can't, because so much focus has been on tight, tight squeeze.
Yeah.
But really a lot of people need to know how to relax and let go. And then timing, like it needs to be able to come on quickly before you cough or sneeze or laugh. And that timing in pregnancy, especially third trimester, is like delayed by half a second, which is sometimes why people will laugh with their friends and the pelvic floor took half a second and they leak just a little bit.
Yeah.
Or like women with double unders, even if you pee right before, it's normal to have 20 mils left in your bladder or less. Yeah, and 20 mils is like a tablespoon in a bit. So if you lose that, that's actually quite a lot. So that timing of how it works is really important. And knowing that if people are really bad and uncoordinated, they need to lie down so they can let everything else be off and then work out how to do it. Then we get them to coordinate it with your breath. So often we'll teach people as you breathe in, let it go. As you breathe out, squeeze.
Yep.
Breathe in, let it go. Breathe out, squeeze. Because that's what I'll usually bring into exercise.
Yes, okay.
In real life, it works different ways.
So
it's variety. Isn't that part of CrossFit?
Yeah.
But then it's trying to teach people in different positions. So it needs to be able to work when you're standing, you know, when you're walking. So it's then trying to bring it into different exercises. But the standard has been 3 sets of 10 for 10 seconds, 3 times a day. I don't even think they specify positions, but like lying, sitting, standing, hands in your knees.
And over what sort of period? Like your whole pregnancy?
Forever. It's forever.
Get them strong.
That is pretty much the standard.
Right.
But that doesn't get people strong. Like,
no.
Again, it's
more of an awareness thing is what you're saying.
And it's an endurance as well as a strength muscle, which is where like we need it to be able to be active for long periods of time at lower intensities, but then come in quickly and be really strong. And that's where if that's what we need, then we have to train it that way. And that's why it's good, because CrossFit does so many different positions and movements that if you can bring it into, not you don't do every exercise, but just bringing it into some exercises, like pick one exercise, a workout to bring it into, then you can start to think about it a bit more. But dynamic activities like, you know, running, it's not supposed to be on like and then stay on the whole time.
Yeah.
Same thing with, you know, skipping. So a lot of this earlier stuff is trying to prepare for harder things, or even like sport. If you go out and you're playing soccer and you try to think about it before you kick the ball, you probably get a ball in your head. It's doing it in kind of the accessory muscles or something that's a little bit more slow and controlled that you can think about, or modifications,
yeah.
which is what you often do in pregnancy
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. yeah.
And then you'll be really good at it for when the baby comes out.
Yeah, perfect. So do you touch on, going to the bathroom quickly before
double unders
yeah. or, you know, before any sort of conditioning that might cause that. Now, is that beneficial? Is that like going to the, you know, because we'll often have mums and, you know, that have been through this. Cool, I just need 90 seconds before we hit the go to run to the toilet, go to the toilet, make sure I'm minimizing any sort of risk of, you know, leakage and stuff like that. If that's a concern, should they be looking at, you know, making a bit more of a conscious effort like we just spoke about to do those things? Or
It's a funny one because people will say don't pee before you do them because you're going to train your bladder to be overactive, which is another pelvic floor issue that people can have. Their bladder can be extra happy, overactive.
And you go to the bathroom a lot. Is that
yes.
what you mean?
Yeah. So if people feel like they have to pee every half hour, but there's only, you know, 50 mils in it, and they're like, oh, that was a waste of time.
Yes.
I didn't really need to, but you really feel like you do.
Yeah,
now,
right.
Going before you do double unders every single time, even if you did double unders every day and that's the only just-in-case pee that you do,
yeah.
not a big deal.
Yeah,
It's not going to cause that. For comfort, like your bladder is just a storage vessel to hold urine until a comfortable time that you can let it out.
Yeah.
So to have any kind of fluid in there when you are jumping up and down numerous times, very high, it's just more comfortable not to have
yeah.
it in there.
Okay. Yeah.
So if people...
So no one's doing themselves a disservice.
They're not, but yeah, I want people to understand if they're doing it because they know that they leak, right. A, it may not fix the problem.
Yes.
You still may leak when that happens.
Yep.
And B, it's usually a sign that something's going on that you need to address. And as
yep.
physios, like I said, it's not just pelvic floor. It might be connective tissue. And if it is
yeah.
connective tissue, we use things called pessaries,
yep.
which is like a tampon or different
yep.
shapes and sizes. They're silicon. They go inside and they kind of
yep.
support the bladder.
Right.
And some women just use it for exercise.
Oh, okay.
And it allows them to be able to do some of that activity without having to wear pads or to have embarrassing moments, which, again, social media has glorified sometimes, like 18.3.
Yeah, I remember seeing something like that. Yeah.
Well, 18.3 was what, like the 800 double unders?
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah
and the
yeah,
amount
the
of social media
unders.
Photos I saw of people... I mean, it's good that people are talking about it, but it wasn't...
There's no stigma, yeah.
And it's hard if you're embarrassed. So you don't want to be embarrassed on social media. You want to kind of almost be proud. But then what message are you giving people? That, like,
yeah.
if you... A lot of the messaging CrossFit has been, and it's not CrossFit's fault, headquarters or anything.
Yeah.
But it has been, you know, you've worked hard enough, therefore you've leaked. Or you haven't worked
yeah.
hard enough unless... You've leaked.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's like the vomiting thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
yes. And
yeah,
I've had somebody say, like, well, how is it different than vomiting? Like, if vomiting is acceptable, why isn't doing that acceptable? I'm like, because it's telling you that something is wrong. And if you continually push through that, you know, you may then have more problems later on. And it happens when you every time you cough or get out of a chair or just walking around.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, even the vomiting thing. I mean, you know, we're moving away, hopefully, from that because, you know, it's not... Although it's, like, acceptable, we shouldn't be pushing for people to get themselves into that situation, you know, where they're working out so hard that they're vomiting every time they train. That's
yeah.
That's not cool, you know. Even though, like you said, it can be perceived as you're not going hard enough unless you leak or vomit or...
Yeah.
Know, whatever. But, cool. All right, so let's... We'll go on fair while for time here. So
yeah, I'm like, ooh,
I'm
I see some missed
time.
Calls from
yeah,
my
yeah.
husband.
Yeah. So if we can, we'll quickly wrap up. Like, just let's talk post baby.
Yep.
And what we can do there. Like, what's your recommendation?
Well, it all depends on what happens.
I've had my baby. I have had it naturally, no C-section, and I want to get back into CrossFit. I would personally say, and what I do say here in the gym is, before you come back to us, you need to go see a physio.
Hmm. And like, preferably a physio who knows a little bit about CrossFit.
Like, yes, perfect.
I'm not here to promote myself, but of course you can come see me.
Yeah.
But I, only because I was that physio who didn't understand enough of it. And when I saw people, it's really hard to modify things when you really don't understand. And in the women's health pelvic floor world, the default has been that's bad, therefore, and you shouldn't do it. And not even just postnatally, but ever.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so, had a bad rap because of a video many years ago.
Yeah, right. What was the video?
You know that video with Rory McKernan?
Oh, Miranda.
What's his name? They did like a leaking.
Oh,
is,
yes, I do.
You know,
remember.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
But that, okay. That yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so. Yeah, yeah, cool. So, so I've just had a baby and I want to get back into training. What are you checking for? What are you making sure? What are some things that new mums need to be mindful of?
So everything we just talked about in pregnancy, your 6-week GP or obstetrician appointment is to clear any like red flag, sinister pathology, like an infection, blood, you know, something still left in there, something that they have to surgically fix or that needs medical management. A lot of them don't understand, you know, the musculoskeletal side system, of things. Yeah. So they'll usually say you are clear to do whatever you want.
Yeah, okay, right.
So a go lot of, yeah, the, and look, that's what most of them will say, and they may not understand what is involved in CrossFit or, so I just do find that a lot of, my best friend's an obstetrician, so we have great talks.
Cool.
But yeah, so just knowing that that 6-week all clear doesn't mean you are all clear to do everything, and, you know, it is a really good idea to connect with a physio who will able to do like an internal exam or has not ultrasound on your tummy, it's not enough.
Yeah.
So that, you know, we look at your pelvic floor muscles have to be gaining some strength. So your first 6 weeks is generally going to be working a lot on pelvic floor, but you're doing 500 things with a newborn. So, and a completely new body that is still stretched
so
and stretchy.
Just to clarify, should be doing nothing, not, like shouldn't really be coming back into the gym in that 6 weeks period?
Look, it depends how much, sleep's going to be a big factor. Depends how much you're sleeping. Because
depends who you are, I guess, as well. Again.
Yeah, who you are, like if you've had a, you know, traumatic birth, think of like if you ruptured your Achilles, you're not usually, I mean, you can come in and do your arm stuff.
Yeah.
But that's where like, a lot of women still want and need that social side. And if you're not too tired, coming in to do accessory work like bridges and, you know, things that you're
still part of it.
You're still part of
still
it. You can
talking and
slowly get back into it. Yeah. But I usually will still get people around the 6 to 8 weeks to just have a look at, you know, where is your pelvic floor? Because if it's pretty good, even though you've had a vaginal birth, then you might be okay to start doing more than somebody else who has had a lot of trauma and stitches and forceps and tearing.
Yeah.
And they might need to take it just that little bit slower. Bit
easier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it's so hard because it's so individual.
Yep. Perfect. And then finally, just see the obviously a C-section. So they've had a cesarean. Rules are a little bit more stringent on that? Like
yeah, well, because they've had kind of major abdominal surgery, and it's not just the skin that has stitches. The uterus has stitches. There's a couple different layers that they physically have had to go through in order to get to the baby.
Yeah.
So recovery is trying to make sure that you don't... That scar tissue where the stitches are is going to be less... has less strength than normal tissue. So you want to make sure you don't do something really forcefully that pops your stitches open or that breaks up that scar tissue too much before it's really solidified.
Right.
But it's still similar. And this is where, again, a lot of women will have stitches down below as well. So just knowing that, you know, there might be stitches and scar work that you don't want to do nothing for 6 weeks. But again, the stuff you're doing with your baby is still movement and exercise to a brand new body.
Yeah.
But
if it's
almost
a new baby, you probably, you got a lot going on.
Yeah, but it's taking it like you've just started CrossFit. Like those first, I usually will tell people, or I feel like people will generally not worry about trying to come back till around that 4 week mark.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I think people really should be taking a good 6 to 8 weeks just to, you know, breathe.
Yeah.
And work and things out.
And also enjoy the that
enjoy
time.
It. Yeah. Because
it's so quick.
Yeah. It can be quick and hard.
Yeah.
But again, you don't want to feel like you are really getting deconditioned. So yeah, it depends on, you know, how hard you want to take it. But yeah, so just starting off like you haven't done CrossFit in a year.
Yep, perfect.
And, you know, doing all the skill work, learning, you know, seeing, okay, you have to pick up your child, you have to pick up your laundry basket, probably, depending on the time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a deadlift. Yeah. So it's making sure that you can still do those movement patterns, but learning the coordination, making sure trying to do that.
Perfect. One thing I failed to mention just in the whole training thing while pregnant is heat. It's not so bad now because we're coming into winter.
Yeah.
But just that training through summer, need to be really mindful of overheating your body.
Yep.
That's quite a dangerous one too. So, but we'll wrap it up there, Laurie. Thanks so much for coming in. I think our members are going to get a lot out of all of that information that you gave us. Guys, as per normal, if you have any questions, please shoot them through to us. If you would like to follow Laurie on Pelvic Wad, is that that's the Instagram handle?
Yep. I got a Twitter, which is a lot. We do a lot for research, so it's at Laurie Forner. My website's laurieforner.com, and I also have a little podcast, but it's generally at the beginning was kind of aimed for health and fitness professionals, but we do a lot of things for general public as well. But we dive deeper into a lot of these little issues with pelvic floor and pelvic health.
Excellent. Yep. Excellent. So I recommend, guys, that you get on board with that info, especially if you're pregnant or, you know, even if you're trying to get pregnant, you got to check it out as well. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks and, for having
good
me
luck
again.
With everything you're doing, and hopefully we see you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Laurie.